The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, Beth. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show, the YouTube live chat poll for today. We want to know what you think. Should America pursue acquiring Greenland in some capacity? Yes or no? We've got a few people who have reached out and commented their thoughts so far. Betsy said, yes, why not? That's kind of simple. I see your point. Jackie said, yes, in some capacity for security purposes. Let's make a deal mutually beneficial. And Dirk said, I chose yes, but I would leave it up to the citizens of Greenland. When you listen to what the citizens have said, I mean, the citizens, there are 56,000 of them. We could probably get a majority of them to weigh in on the issue, and they could take a vote, and we could abide by whatever that vote ends up being. There, you can go on social media and see that right now, Charlie Kirk and Donald Trump Jr. are in Greenland, and they're talking to the people of Greenland about what's going on.
Okay, we're here in Greenland with Don Jr.
Everyone wants to be on TikTok.
What do you guys think of America?
Great.
Love America, and you love Trump?
Yes, of course.
The youth of Greenland, Don.
We're hearing a lot of it, guys. We're hearing a lot of it.
And you guys all watch TikTok,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, of course. I'll follow you.
Oh, thank you. Live from Greenland.
So you've got the two people who are top-tier leaders in the MAGA movement that helped get Donald Trump reelected. But of course, when we say get Donald Trump reelected, we're talking about getting an America First mentality back in the White House. It's bigger than one man. It's bigger than Donald Trump. And Charlie Kirk may have been one of the single most influential people in making that a possibility, making that happen once again. Every day you wake up and you look at the news cycle and you see that people are, they're just weird things that are shifting. There are weird things that are changing. People who are participating in the movement, people who are now interested for some particular reason in a different way of doing things. That it's, to me, it's pretty impactful to watch it happen. But you do also have to be, you have to be conscious of what these people might gain from participating now. Like, oh, so there's a different person in charge. Of course, you want to make sure that that different person has the ability to play the game. And they were doing it quite differently when Joe Biden was in office. When it comes to social media, when it comes to people who were at Twitter, different than Elon Musk, of course, when it comes to Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, we're watching as he is dramatically shifting his position on how Facebook is managed and what Facebook has to offer the American people. He released this video and he has quite a lot to say, and we're gonna sift through it here.
Hey everyone,
on the show
I want to talk about something important today, because it's time to get back to our roots around free expression on Facebook and Instagram. I started building social media to give people a voice. I gave a speech at Georgetown 5 years ago about the importance of protecting free expression, and I still believe this today. But a lot has happened over the last several years. There's been widespread debate about potential harms from online content. Governments and legacy media have pushed to censor more and more. A lot of this is clearly political, but there's also a lot of legitimately bad stuff out there.
So I'm going to interrupt Mark Zuckerberg right now. And if you're like me, all you're doing is sitting here thinking, Mark, you're the problem. Like, you were the problem. So before you go and listen to some of the things that he might offer here as solutions, you have to ask yourself, are you open-minded enough right now to listen to what Mark Zuckerberg has to say? Is it possible that Mark Zuckerberg can change? We've seen a lot of people over the course of the last 10 years dramatically change their opinion on Donald Trump. Brad, when you think about Mark Zuckerberg, I mean, he doesn't need money.
No.
He's not doing this for money. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't mind having more money, power. But I always go back to the guy who's the vice president-elect of the United States called Trump Hitler.
Yeah. When I look at Mark Zuckerberg, one of the things that I immediately think of is this guy's super intelligent. I think he went to, what, go to MIT or something like that?
I don't know. I watched the movie.
Yeah, The Social Network. But he went to one of those type of schools, if not MIT. And he's not stupid. And I think one of the markers of a highly intelligent individual is the ability to admit whenever they got something wrong. And I think what he's been doing is looking at maybe his intentions whenever he put these other things in place at Facebook were pure. Maybe
could his intentions have not been the same as the outcome?
Yes, absolutely. I think what he said was, is, but there's also a lot of bad content out there. And what he wanted to do was shield people from that bad content. But as he got into it, maybe things got knotted up and he's finding out that maybe like a small group of people aren't the best way of doing this. Maybe.
And you said something there that he wanted to shield people.
Yes.
The other question is that his responsibility?
Well, no. And maybe that's something that he realized too. It's like, hey, this isn't my responsibility. I mean, I go back, like in light of this video and going back and looking at all of his stuff that he like in front of Congress and all that other stuff, you could almost look back and maybe see somebody that was looking for guidance rather than being...
He's a bellwether.
Yeah.
There's no one who's done what he's done. He did it first.
Right.
And he kind of unintentionally created this. A good comment here from a listener here, I think it was Mark, said Elon pivoted.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important. Elon Musk has not always been the Elon Musk of the MAGA, ultra MAGA, rockstar MAGA, right? That's not who Elon Musk always was. And we had to look at his evolution, which I don't think you can evolve in these places and change because you're provided more information, more perspective. Maybe you've learned a tough lesson here. Listen, I don't know where I am on Mark Zuckerberg. I am my Facebook page. I worked my butt. Can I say that word? I can say that word. In my house, we say booty. I work my booty off to make the Annie Fry Show Facebook page be a destination for my teeny tiny little Saturday 2-hour show on 97.1. That is where I focused my efforts to build a community so that I could hopefully have some success on this show in a greater capacity than 2 hours on Saturday. And it was a part of helping me reach people who were interested in participating in the family that is this show. I think Facebook helped me gain success because I was able to use social media in a way that helped me grow. So I'm grateful for that. But in 2020, I have been at 19,000 likes or follows or whatever it is on Facebook since 2020. I go in and I look at I'm adding followers all the time, but the number never goes up. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And I am not nearly the most bombastic person on. I'm not. I'm not that girl. I hear from you folks all the time. You could go check right now. You think you follow me on Facebook? Go check, because a lot of you did, and now for whatever particular reason, you don't. I have not been able to get over 20,000 people on Facebook for years. But I've been at, like, I think it's 19,922 or something. Mm. Can't get over 20,000 for the life of me. Don't know why, but it sure happened during COVID. And I personally put that on Mark Zuckerberg. It bothers me. So I have a personal reason to dislike this man. But I also have to ask myself, could he change? And if he changes, can I have an open enough mind about him to embrace a positive evolution in what he has to offer people when it comes to social media? Because just like Elon Musk, it would be wildly beneficial for the First Amendment and the United States of America if free speech existed there.
Drugs, terrorism, child exploitation, these are things that we take very seriously, and I want to make sure that we handle responsibly. So we built a lot of complex systems to moderate content. But the problem with complex systems is they make mistakes. Even if they accidentally censor just 1% of posts, that's millions of people. And we've reached a point where it's just too many mistakes and too much censorship. The recent elections also feel like a cultural tipping point towards once again prioritizing speech. So we're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. More specifically, here's what we're going to do. First, we're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes, similar to X, starting in the US. After Trump first got elected in 2016, the legacy media wrote nonstop about how misinformation was a threat to democracy.
Can we just highlight here that you have Mark Zuckerberg, he's sitting at a desk with a pretty nondescript like panel wall behind him and his super curly hair, and he looks like he's been working out. He does not look like a android anymore.
No. Got a little color to his face.
There's something about him that's different. But he's talking about X in a complimentary way. He's talking, did you hear him say legacy media? These are important choices of words for Mark Zuckerberg.
We tried in good faith to address those concerns without becoming the arbiters of truth. But the fact checkers have just been too politically biased and have destroyed more trust than they've created, especially in the US. So over the next couple of months, we're going to phase in a more comprehensive community notes system. Second, we're going to simplify our content policies and get rid of a bunch of restrictions on topics like immigration and gender that are just out of touch with mainstream discourse. What started as a movement to be more inclusive has increasingly been used to shut down opinions and shut out people with different ideas, and it's gone too far. So I want to make sure that people can share their beliefs and experiences on our platforms. Third, we're changing how we enforce our policies to reduce the mistakes that account for the vast majority of censorship on our platforms. We used to have filters that scanned for any policy violation. Now, we're going to focus those filters on tackling illegal and high-severity violations. And for lower-severity violations, we're going to rely on someone reporting an issue before we take action. The problem is that the filters make mistakes, and they take down a lot of content that they shouldn't. So by dialing them back, we're going to dramatically reduce the amount of censorship on our platforms. We're also going to tune our content filters to require much higher confidence before taking down content. The reality is that this is a trade-off. It means we're going to catch less bad stuff, but we'll also reduce the number of innocent people's posts and accounts that we accidentally take down.
So when you listen to him saying this, they're no longer going to be the thought police. Like what we were, the question that you were, or that I asked you, Brad, before, when you say he wanted to shield people from that, he's saying, I'm not going to be your shield anymore. And that's going to come with some consequences. All you poor little people out there reading Facebook might see something you don't like. Tough cookies.
Yeah.
Like that's just the way it's going to be. And it does. Yeah. If you don't like it, you don't have to like it. You don't have to physically participate in it. That's fine. Good for him for saying, we're going to err on the side of letting truth out there before we decide to take things down.
Fourth, we're bringing back civic content. For a while, the community asked to see less politics because it was making people stressed. So we stopped recommending these posts. But it feels like we're in a new era now, and we're starting to get feedback that people want to see this content again. So we're going to start phasing this back into Facebook, Instagram, and Threads while working to keep the communities friendly and positive. Fifth, we're going to move our trust and safety and content moderation teams out of California, and our US-based content review is going to be based in Texas. As we work to promote free expression, I think that it will help us build trust to do this work in places where there is less concern about the bias of our teams. Finally, We're going to work with President Trump to push back on governments around the world that are going after American companies and pushing to censor more. The U.S. has the strongest constitutional protections for free expression in the world. Europe has an ever-increasing number of laws institutionalizing censorship and making it difficult to build anything innovative there. Latin American countries have secret courts that can order companies to quietly take things down. China has censored our apps from even working in the country. The only way that we can push back on this global trend is with the support of the U.S. government. And that's why it's been so difficult over the past 4 years when even the U.S. government has pushed for censorship. By going after us and other American companies, it has emboldened other governments to go even further. But now we have the opportunity to restore free expression, and I am excited to take it. It'll take time to get this right, and these are complex systems. They're never going to be perfect. There's also a lot of illegal stuff that we still need to work very hard to remove. But the bottom line is that after years of having our content moderation work focus primarily on removing content, it is time to focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our systems, and getting back to our roots about giving people voice. I'm looking forward to this next chapter. Stay good out there, and more to come soon.
So Mark Zuckerberg here, again, I don't know what I think about this. I don't know if I'm like, gosh, Mark Zuckerberg is the next patriot. He's going to be wearing a MAGA hat soon. You don't need to wear a MAGA hat in order to show me that you are America first. That's not a requirement. He's saying the right things. He's admitting that they made mistakes, and he's saying we're going to offer solutions that fit in the system similar to what Elon Musk has set up on X, and that they're going to work with Donald Trump to make sure that free speech prevails across the world. I don't know what to do with it. I'll tell you this, though. This is preferable to status quo at Facebook. So I wonder what you think about it, and I wonder if it makes you feel like you're are you at least leaning in? I'm leaning in. That's all. I'm not going to say fool me once, fool me twice. You know the thing. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm leaning in. I got an eyebrow raised. Maybe even two. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Paula Scanlon's going to join us. This is wonderful. She's with Early Vote Action. You know Scott Pressler, who basically won the presidency back for Donald Trump by turning Pennsylvania red. Well, they've set their sights on another state, New Jersey. What do I got to do to get him to come to Illinois? I don't think they think that that's in play yet. But what if it were? New Jersey coordinator at Early Vote Action, Paula Scanlon's going to join us and talk to us about their pursuit of turning New Jersey red. Paula Scanlon, when we come back.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at 1/3 of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
We just had a slam dunk for the Republican Party. We have a trifecta. We delivered the White House, Senate, House. And look, for all intents and purposes, 1/4 of Pennsylvania's border joins with New Jersey. There are a lot of shared values. And so one thing that we're going to be doing, Steve, from the spring and summer, all in 2025, is going to Wildwood. That's where Philly goes to the beach. Let's register voters and get both New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Well, here on the Annie Fry Show, you certainly know that voice. That's Scott Pressler, who we've been talking to since he's been having dumpsters delivered to Baltimore to just clean up streets. And in doing so, in that amount of time, since he has been coming on the show, he essentially flipped Pennsylvania for Donald Trump. It's been wild to watch his progress, and he is committed to staying in Pennsylvania and continuing his efforts there. But as you just heard Scott Pressler talking about, he's taking his efforts also to New Jersey, and that's how we get our next guest. Paula Scanlon joins us right now, New Jersey coordinator at Early Vote Action, and you can follow her, and I encourage you to do so, on X at Paula Y. Scanlon. Paula, thank you for coming on the show with us today. It is a pleasure to meet you and talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Of course. So we've seen the walk and the talk from Scott in Pennsylvania, and now we get to point to the scoreboard and put measurements of success behind it. New Jersey next. Tell us why New Jersey and what kind of success you're hoping to see there.
Absolutely. So New Jersey honestly even surprised me. I've been hearing whispers. I saw that Wildwood rally that had over 100,000 people there for President Donald J. Trump, which was crazy. But what I saw in the numbers was the results of the election. New Jersey flipped 11 points from 2020 to 2024. What other state in this country had a shift that was that radical? And I've grown up in the Northeast, and I used to have the belief that the Northeast was not worth fighting for, that there was no way a Republican would ever be elected in any major position, that, or even that the state would go red. But after seeing that, we're saying, wow, no, New Jersey might not even just be a purple state. It might even be a red one. So we have our eyes now set on the governor race that's happening in 2025. So New Jersey is one of those off states that does the governor election in an off year, not with midterms. And we are trying to get a Republican governor in New Jersey.
I think it's so inspiring to hear, Paula, that essentially what you are saying, what Early Vote Action, who you are with, is saying, is that New Jersey is worth it. It's worth the time. It's worth the intention. And it's worth the support that people here in our bi-state region. I'm in St. Louis, so I live in Illinois. We could talk about that. And we have a very blue state on the east side of the Mississippi and a very red state in Missouri on the west side of the Mississippi. So when you feel like things are just predetermined, it kind of makes people a little bit apathetic. In New Jersey, are you seeing energy now going into that governor race that will take place this year where people are like, yeah, let's make this happen. Let's put our feet on the ground and see some change in action here.
Absolutely. I mean, I've spent the last several days on phone calls with people in all different counties from New Jersey dying to get involved, dying to have help, dying to get Democrats out of leadership positions in their state. I was on a phone call a couple minutes before I hopped on here with a guy who was very eager to get involved and help, and again, turn out voters for a Republican governor and more Republican leadership. So hopefully if you win the governorship, right, that falls down a little bit, and you're going to have people in the state Senate and the state House that are Republicans as well, and people want to see change. And the biggest thing that we're seeing in New Jersey is affordability. People do not like the cost of things. I mean, homeowners can't afford to buy homes. Renters are being screwed over. There's a lot going on, and people are upset about the cost of things. And none of the Democrats have showed any desire to fix that or any tangible plans to actually fix these things.
Paula Scanlon is with us right now. She is with Early Vote Action, and she's working to help flip New Jersey red this year as they have a important midterm race, I might say, that takes place in 2025. I've got some numbers here from the NewJerseyGlobe.com. New Jersey Republicans outpaced Democrats by more than 2-1 margin on voter registration in 2024, reducing the Democratic voter registration edge to 896,000, down from over a million 4 years ago. So the numbers are trending this way, just like you were talking about the difference in the 2024 election results. You're talking about affordability for New Jerseyans. When you are focusing on getting a message out, do you keep the message really narrow? Do you touch on all of the issues that maybe a red voter versus a blue voter might be interested in? Or do you just keep it in the lane of the economy?
We definitely branch out. I mean, I just listen to the people. I have been talking to people who live in New Jersey and just hearing what hits them. And when we go to certain areas, obviously hitting on things that are closer to home. But what I've noticed is the thing that's come up every single time is the affordability, is these high costs, these high home prices, all of those different factors. And so obviously that's the general thing that people are struggling with. We're going to continue to bring that up, but we are looking at smaller issues. We are hearing from all the different people. And again, we're just trying to show them that there is people that are listening. We are listening to them. Republicans do have their best interests at heart, and we're encouraging them to say, okay, you're unhappy with what's going on. Now get out there and go vote in November, or vote early before then, and put a Republican in a government position.
We're speaking with Paula Scanlon here on the Annie Fry Show, and we're talking to her about the efforts from Early Vote Action to move not away from Pennsylvania, but really to add New Jersey into the mix. How do people who are listening to our show right now, middle of the country, St. Louis, Missouri, a lot of Illinois listeners as well, like I said, where I'm from, how do we watch what Early Vote Action is doing, in New Jersey, support your efforts there, and then maybe take some notes about how we could use those here in our hometowns.
Absolutely. I mean, you can get on our website, earlyvoteaction.com. If you're so inclined to donate, you're welcome to do so. Not going to make you. But you can also look at the voter registration tools because there is resources for other states. But just talking about grassroots efforts to get these things done, I mean, it's not this fancy organization. It's not, you know, a ton of money. It's just getting out to highly populated areas and talking to people and saying, hey, are you registered to vote? And encouraging them to go out and vote. And that's really what it comes down to. And you can do that wherever you live. And I know there are people in other states that are dying for us to come expand. And the goal someday is to look into other states and continue to grow this operation and teach people how to take an election and win through the grassroots efforts, which is exactly what this is. It's really mobilizing local people that are just excited and passionate about this and just want to better their community by electing leaders that actually have their best interests at heart.
I have the Early Vote Action app on my phone. I was always paying. I'm showing it to our listeners here right now. Just pulled it up. Scott Pressler is very persuasive. He tells you to do something.
You can write letters, too. Yeah. That's something people have done from other states. So
talk to me about that.
Please get on there.
If you download the Early Vote Action app and you get on there, what can people do from the comfort? I mean, we've got a lot of snow here right now. Maybe you do, too, where you're at.
Yeah, you can write letters to people. That helped a lot in Pennsylvania. And so you don't have to be from the state. It's just, again, encouraging people. There is something for everyone in this country to do and to help. And it's not exclusive just to New Jersey, right? We're still staying in Pennsylvania. Scott is also talking about Wisconsin. He's talking about everything. And so this is not just we're only in one state. This is everywhere in this country. We want to save this entire country, not just focus on one state.
Yeah. And watching Scott's efforts, and like I said, we've talked to him for a long time before I remember when he was like, I will not, I was like, maybe 2022, maybe after midterm, he's like, I am not leaving Pennsylvania until I've registered everybody here. And then he did it. And then we won Pennsylvania. Who saw it coming? Paula, we hope to be talking about you in the same way at the end of this year when those New Jersey election results come in. And I, as an Illinois voter, passionate about my home state, know that it's very blue, know that there's a lot of corruption that exists in the blue state nature of Illinois. We'll be taking copious notes on how you guys move through this New Jersey effort. We hope for great success, and we'd love to have you come back on and tell us how it's going.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for just giving us the time to talk about this. And again, we're all in this together. So anyone listening, we'd love to have your help. If you want to get involved, check out earlyvoteaction.com.
You bet. The app. Thank you. Get the app. Absolutely. Paula Scanlon, we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you. So it is so wonderful to see the expansion of Early Vote Action. Actually, I should say this, the establishment of Early Vote Action that came amidst Scott Pressler's efforts to win Pennsylvania, and to be able to see it expand into something, Early Vote Action, that is now going to New Jersey. If you're like me, I mean, if you're an Illinois voter, okay. If you are somebody who is in Missouri, yeah, I know a lot of you who are in Missouri who used to be in Illinois. I know it. And you're asking me, maybe even right now on our socials, Annie, just move. Just do it already. I get it. I understand it. My family is in Illinois. My home is in Illinois. And I would like to fight to save Illinois. And when I see New Jersey get put into the conversation, I go, well, why not us? Why not here? So I'll be watching very carefully what Paula is able to accomplish in New Jersey. And gosh, sometimes I want to throw myself completely into the whole mix and just say, let's actually dedicate ourselves to getting some common sense back into government for Illinoisans. It absolutely needs to happen. A quick break here. When we come back, I'll read a few more of your comments on the YouTube live chat poll. Should America pursue acquiring Greenland in some capacity? Yes or no? Mark said, I chose yes. Allow the Greenlanders maintain their identity and culture and lower our cost of natural resources and increased security militarily. Gosh, that is a wonderful case, Mark. I stand by all of that. And Hunter, talking a little bit about our discussion at the beginning of this hour, Mark Zuckerberg and his recalibration of how information is policed on Facebook. He's making a lot of changes. He's making a lot of promises. I think we are all in a maybe trust but verify, if not just verify. What is to happen there? Hunter asks a very important question about Mark Zuckerberg's transformation evolution here. Will they be bringing back the poke feature? Wouldn't it be funny to go back on Facebook and start poking people again? How weird was that? I am in favor also of bringing it back. Thank you, Hunter. Quick break. When we come back, a few more of your comments on the YouTube live chat poll. We'll be right back. I need to go check that out and see if I can still do that in a way that would... I feel like I would be better at Zumba than you guys. That's kind of the bar that I have set right now. But it's, you know, it's for fitness. Do you want to... Are you doing any New Year's health things?
I'm going to start tracking calories and stuff like that and make sure that I'm regular at the gym like I should be. So I'm trying to go about 3 times a week, do weight training and cardio.
What kind of calorie tracking are you doing? Can we talk about it? I didn't ask you.
I'm going to use an app, and I've got a goal.
My Fitness Pal?
That's one of them. I've used that one. I've used Zoom. I've used a bunch. What was the other one? Runkeeper. But My Fitness Pal works great because you can just scan it with a barcode.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to use, you know, that app, and I'm going to, scan in my calories. I got my caloric goal that I'm trying to hit, a little bit of a deficit to drop a few pounds and get
back
to where
I was. What's your caloric goal?
My caloric goal is 1800 calories.
Yeah.
So I'm basing that off of, you know, the idea that an average person should have 2000 calories.
And you're a full size man.
Yeah. So I should probably have more than 2000 calories to maintain.
I was hoping you weren't going to say something too stupidly low.
No, but I'm trying to do that as a starting point. So, trying to be reasonable, but then also my app connects to my Fitbit, and my Fitbit, whenever I do exercise.
Why do you say that like you're from the South?
I don't know. Do I say it like from South?
Fitbit.
Fitbit.
How do you spell that? Fit. F-E-E-I-T?
But it tracks my exercise and adds that. And then I get bonus calories so I can eat more, which is great at the
I
end of the day.
I get bonus calories. I quit when I was training. I'm going back into my Blue Angels preparation, but I have no Blue Angels to fly with. I probably knew in February that it was a possibility. I think I found out for sure. Was it March? It might have been later than that. No, because I did most of my training for that knowing that it was a possibility. And I thought, well, what's the worst that could happen? I end up getting fit in a way to sustain, what did I do? 7.5 G's for 9 seconds?
Yeah,
or was it bigger? Was it 7.5? I think it was 7.5 G's.
7.5 G's, yeah.
I told my husband I need to go back and watch that video again. It's been far enough in the past that I think if I watched it again, I would almost be kind of experiencing it again, as opposed to just referencing. If you're new to the show, if you didn't know this, if you were paying attention last year, you know this, but I flew in an F-18 Super Hornet with the Blue Angels last year, which is the craziest thing I've ever done. I've had 4 children. That was wild. That was crazier. But I trained for it, and I did weightlifting 2 or 3 times a week, and I went to a medical provider that was helping me kind of guide my nutrition, and I appreciated this so much. And this is, I don't want to give anyone advice because you should go to your doctor and you should talk to them about what you're doing. But I'll tell you what worked for me and what I'm getting back into the swing of doing for myself. I am not ever going to count calories again, but I am 100% going to count macros. And I was doing 100 grams plus of protein almost every day. And in order to eat 100 grams of protein, you have to be very specific and intentional about finding things that have protein, especially if you're like me and you're not really a huge carnivore. I am in no way, shape, or form a vegetarian, but do you know anyone else who doesn't eat meat off of a bone who will eat meat but can't eat like a fried chicken leg?
No, you're kind of the only person that I know. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm not sorry. I've always had this aversion to the thought of putting a piece of like fried chicken or whatever, if you're eating that and it just feels so much like an animal part. When I have a steak and it's just on my plate, it doesn't feel as much like an animal part.
Does like a ribeye or a T-bone steak bother you?
Isn't ribeye like super fatty?
It might be. I'm just trying to think of the cuts that actually have a piece of the bone in it. Like a T-bone steak will actually have a piece of the bone in it.
My husband does all the cooking and especially meat preparation, and I will eat a pork steak, and if it's got a bone in it, I just cut it off, and I don't want to be consuming bones inside my meat. I just don't want to do that. I had to go over 7 different ways to say that in my head, and that's the best I could do. I don't want that. I hate the way it makes me feel. It turns me off to the whole process of eating carnivorously, so I just don't. And I never liked it growing up. My grandma would make great fried chicken, and it'd be on the table, and it would, you know, these, when you're talking about people who grew up like through the Great Depression, and these are people who made food, it was real food the way they made it. You put fried chicken on the table and it does taste great, but I hate it. Oh my gosh. You get a bite of gristle and I just,
No, that's not great.
You get a tendon or something going on. And I mean, even the words of that makes me nauseated. I was repulsed by it, but I liked the chicken. It wasn't like I didn't like the meat. I just didn't like that part of it. And it always makes me wonder, like, the meat that I would be willing to consume, like, how many things has it had to go through to get to the place where it's palatable for me? And then, like, how far away are you from the actual product being the way it is? But if you're not somebody who's like, oh, yeah, let's have, you know, a chicken breast or whatever it is every night, or some sort of steak and there's bones and all that stuff, if you're not that person, it becomes harder to eat protein. 100 grams of protein, 40 grams of fiber. That's what I tracked. And when I worked to get that, I was eating 1,400 calories a day on the regular.
Yeah.
And I was never hungry, and I have never felt healthier.
Protein, yeah, protein has a way of filling you up. And it, you know, when you're like, oh, what's 100 grams of protein? I was actually doing this because I think I read somewhere that you're, you know, to lose weight, you should have 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, or 0.8 grams of protein per pound of body weight. And that will help you, and it'll help you stay full longer. That's a lot of protein. It's hard to get to that amount.
Yeah,
so
that's why I eat Greek yogurt, which I have right now. I drink a protein shake, and you got to find a protein shake that tastes good, but also doesn't have a billion grams of added sugar and all that stuff. Rick says, hate to tell you, Andy Fry, all that processed meat came from an animal with bones. Listen, I don't like to eat processed meat either. I like to eat steak that just isn't with the bone. And I know they come from animals. That's not new information, Rick. I know that. I just don't want to put the bone in my mouth. There, I said it. Don't want to do that. It's gross to me. It doesn't bother me if other people do it around me. I just don't like it. And going back to what I was saying about my grandma, when she would make that food, I would always feel guilty for not eating it. And she would, you know, she eat your grandma, this is a different time. Your grandma would make you a meal. You're going to eat that meal. We all grew up that way. And I didn't want to do it, but I would go through the process. I remember being probably a senior in high school, maybe a freshman in college, and being like, I hate this. I've hated this my whole life. And I think I officially am not going to do that anymore. I'm okay with that. It doesn't hurt you for me to not eat the chicken leg.
It's so funny that you, like, my grandma was like, you will eat this. My grandma was like, do you want to eat this? And I was like, yes, absolutely. And I would lie to my grandma and tell my grandma that my mom didn't make us dinner or breakfast or whatever, just so she would make us food and I could have some of my grandma's cooking. That kind of is what helped get
Sorry,
me into
mom.
Trouble to begin with. Oh, yeah, mom told me that. And she would come home because my grandma would chastise her. It was like, you don't feed them kids. And she's like, guys, I fed you lunch.
Rick says, so Jared could cut the meat off the bone for you. That's what he does. And I mean, like, he doesn't cut my meat for me. But if he's making pork steaks, it's not. I mean, when you make pork steaks, and listen, I'm talking to local people here. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you're not from here and you should learn about pork steaks.
Yes.
They're huge.
Yeah.
So if you're going to cut them in half anyway, you can cut one part that doesn't have the bone
Absolutely.
In it. And I just eat that.
Yep.
And someone says, no ribs for Annie. My husband will, oh my gosh, Annie, you have to try this. This is so good. And because he gets ribs from somewhere. So he gives me a bite of the rib meat and I eat it. I just don't want to be the person like with barbecue sauce all over my face talking about how good the ribs are. That's really not in my, that's not really in my repertoire. But I eat meat.
Yeah.
I just don't seek it out. And the truth of the matter is you could have a perfectly good piece of really good quality meat, and then there's like a something chewy or springy in there, I'm done.
Something that's not the right consistency.
As soon as I bite on that and it pops right back at me, I'm toast. That is not happening. Give me some salad.
Oh, man.
Or a potato.
I'm just trying to imagine what it would be like to be able to live without, like, or to not even like meat. That's just odd to me.
Josh says, so sucking the marrow out of the bone is a no-go. Yes, sir, you've inferred correctly. No. Fiber is hard too. If you're not, I mean, I think it's important if you're in your like health journey. I've been paying so much attention. Jillian Michaels, please come on my show. I am a huge fan. I went to see you at Stiefel when you came and spoke here over a decade ago, and I was listening to you talk about what is in our food and why American diet culture is so toxic, because there are people who are selling you solutions that are not connected to the actual problem. And I and it's never been more front and center than it is right now. Jillian, I want to talk to you. I've watched you on The Biggest Loser. I watched you on your podcast just recently where you defended the good things that came with The Biggest Loser. And I want to amplify this thing that I don't know anything really about. And the annexation of the RFK Jr. Thought process on where our food comes from, what is done to our food, and how willfully and stupidly we've just accepted what we put into our mouths and digest. And then we're like, oh, why are we overweight? Why are we tired? Why do all my joints hurt? When you realize that there is a smarter way to choose the foods that you eat, I'm like, tell me more about this. Tell me everything about this, because I want to make those healthy decisions. And it's just hard. There's so much information out there. And you always feel like someone's selling you something. When it comes to healthy eating in our country, everybody's thinking about this in January. Even if you're not making some sort of dramatic New Year's resolution or whatever, I think everybody's kind of going, okay, that party was wild over the holidays, and I'm going to temper it down. Like, everywhere you look is a cookie or a cake or, you know, some sort of carb that's looking at you going, I'm real tasty. And you're like, I want to get back to the place where I have some level of self-control. And then maybe some of you are making a little bit more promises to yourself. When you realize that you're up against everything everywhere you go, and now we have a political movement that is in favor of, I heard just recently, I don't remember which soda it was, but that RFK Jr. is going to make them replace their high fructose corn syrup with cane sugar or something like that. It was some soda company. These are the things that I assume that we need to be doing, but I want to learn more. I want to be educated on them. And I think it's a really interesting movement within a political climate right now that we are going to learn a lot and go, well, man, I've been having all of these symptoms so long. You mean I've been poisoning my body with the healthy food that I thought I was eating? Tell me more. YouTube live chat poll. Should America pursue acquiring Greenland in some capacity? Yes or no? What do you think? Go vote us. Go vote in the live chat poll. It's on the Annie Fry YouTube channel on today's live broadcast. Back in a minute.
Get more at 971talk.com.